You're listening to the Fat Dude Digs Flicks Movie Podcast Network. What is up, everybody? This is Andy, the resident Fat Dude of Fat Dude Digs Flicks, coming to you recorded from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and it is time for an all-new episode of Let's Talk About. If this is your first time listening to Let's Talk About, welcome. Thank you so much for listening. Let's Talk About is a chat show where I am joined by a guest and we talk about their life, their loves, and a movie that has had an impact on them. Yeah, we'll get right into it this week. I don't have a lot of, preamble. I mean, I guess I could say that I am firmly embroiled in the midst of the Halloween season. So that is the theme of this month's episodes. Every episode kind of tackles a horror or cult or thriller or, you know, kind of one of those kind of pictures. But also, as a side note to that, I am doing the Hooptober Challenge on Letterboxd, and I am currently at 27 movies out of 31, with a 3 bonus, so 34. Got 7 left to go. I'm feeling pretty good about it this year. I think there's a good chance I can complete this. So, you know, maybe by, probably not the next episode, but an episode soon, I'll give you a status on how I've done with Hooptober. 7 movies left. That doesn't seem like a lot. 2 of them are foreign films, so, you know, that those are ones that I have to kind of like focus on. I can't watch those while I'm working. But the 2 like English language films that I have left, I don't necessarily know that I can kind of like split my focus with those either. They're kind of complex. One's a Hitchcock film, and one is a Ken Russell, Altered States. So we'll see what happens. And then the 3 bonus movies, I don't even know, but I can't start. This is my personal rule. I can't start the bonus movies until I've completed the regular list. So if I get the 31 watched, I have succeeded. But if I get the 34 watched, that is success plus. And, you know, I like to sometimes be an overachiever. Sometimes I don't. More often than not, I would say I don't. But when it comes to watching movies, I think that's when I want to overachieve. So I'm hopeful that I can get all 7 of these movies watched. Technically, I have 7 days, so that's a movie a day. But knowing me, I can potentially double up. So we're going to see what happens. I want to, ideally, perfect world here. Ideally, I'll get these 7 movies watched. Still have time to watch The Crow on October 30th, Halloween on October 31st, and somewhere on that weekend ahead of time, finish my viewing of The Exorcist. I've started rewatching it. I'm about a little more than halfway through, so I can kind of wrap that up. And I will be going, I believe I'm going to a screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show this weekend. So those are 4 movies that I like to try to watch every year, if possible. So the goal is to be able to watch those 4 movies. And the 7 movies that I have left of Hooptober. 11 movies in 7 days. It can be done. It can be done. Then throw in a mystery movie at the State on Friday night, a mystery late night. Man, I'm 12 movies in 7 days. Now it's starting to feel a little bit less likely. Starting to get a little worried. Keep adding more movies, and it seems a lot less possible, but I'm trying. Anyway, thanks for listening. If this is your first time listening, you won't always get these little preambles talking about Hooptober. This week's episode is exciting. And it turned out really well. this episode has been, I think we decided like 17, 18 months in the making. And we finally are able to get around to it. I am joined by local movie fan. And he is. He's a big time movie fan. He's very active across social media, including the South Dakota Film Community group on Facebook. But yeah, big time movie fan Seth Benson is joining the show this week. And it's nice to finally sit down and chat with Seth. This has been a long time coming. So go ahead and pop your popcorn, grab your soft drink, kick back, relax, and let's talk about Phantom of the Paradise. All right, everyone, welcome to this week's episode. This week's episode is, it has a funny backstory. Let's just say that. I feel like this episode has been in the works. I feel like it's been in the works for years. When I sit back and look at it, it's probably been in the works for like a couple of years, but it feels like decades that this episode has been planned. And finally, the forces of nature are in alignment, and we are actually able to sit down and record this conversation with local movie buff. Would you call yourself kind of like a cult movie buff?
Oh, heck yes. Yes. I just love cults. I love horror. I love little genres, you know, independent, whatever. If somebody said, you know, you're like the third person who's only seen this, and I'm not going to show any other friends, I'm like, yay. that is cool. I'd say, yeah. Of course, yeah. Cult
movie buff Seth Benson. Seth, how are you? How are things going, man? How were we able to finally make this work?
I don't know. It's just the forces that be have finally made it happen, and it's just been a ride. I think we were trying to do this a couple weeks after Jonah, my youngest son, was born. The thing is, he's almost like 17 months old. Oh, so we've been really trying. Like I thought I was able to record the episode on my downtime, you know, on parents' leave, you know, yeah. And that it did not occur.
But here we are. 17 months later, ready to rock. It's funny because it's like we talked about doing this episode shortly. I can't remember if it was just before or just after I agreed to do Backlot 605's episode on this movie. And like, it's so funny because I hate to say it because I love the guys, but the Backlot 605 podcast is no more. So we it took us until they went away for us to finally get on. Casey, Sam, you guys, I love you. I will still plug Screams from the Basement at the end of this episode because that's what I do. Yes. It's crazy, you know, life is hectic. I totally get it. And I think, you know, being a parent probably adds more obstacles than know what to do with. So but hey, we're here and we're going to sit and chat. So Seth, I'm going to kick things off with the question I always ask everybody right off the bat. And that is, Seth, who are you? Where did you come from? What is your origin story?
Oh, I love this. I'm like, oh, my story is crazy. I'm Seth. I'm 35. I'm married. I actually married my high school girlfriend. We've been together forever. We've got two kids, two boys. Basically, I've lived in Sioux Falls since 2011. and pretty much like for family out here. My origin story is I moved to Iowa when I was like 4 months old with the family and lived there for about 19 years. And yeah, I grew up in a small town, Iowa. So yeah, making it to a movie theater or renting something was like a big deal
Yeah.
for at any age.
Okay, so what city or town, I guess, since it's small town Iowa, what
Oh, yeah.
town did you grow up in? And then what was the nearest, I guess, megaplex, like the metropolis? Like what city were you closest to? 'Cause I can imagine, a lot of people in South Dakota kind of have it the same way, where it's like in between Sioux Falls and Rapid City, like it's small town central, and then you kind
Oh,
of like
yes.
say, well, I lived close to this city. So for you in Iowa, where did you live and where were your, what was your like, I guess, what was your Disney World?
Yeah, that's a really good question. My hometown is Armstrong, Iowa.
Okay.
It's about 20 miles south of Fairmont, Minnesota. It's like 9 miles south
Oh.
of the northwest Iowa border.
Okay.
There's two strange things about Iowa. So the first and most embarrassing one is there were actually some former mayor, a sheriff, and some other town council people all a part of a money embezzling scam.
Ooh.
And that made some national news. That like made the news all the way to Europe. Because one of the people I went to high school, she lives out there and like heard about of this news. Armstrong also, the actor from the Batman series from 1966, he actually went to high school in Armstrong.
Adam West?
Oh no,
Oh.
he was a mayor. He was a mayor character.
Oh, what? Okay. I wish I could think of that actor's name, but I know exactly who you're talking about. I can see him in my head.
His name was Byron Keith, and I just found this out like 2 years ago.
Man.
Yeah, like I lived in Armstrong the whole time, and I've never known that. So there was a huge article. He was also in Beware of the Blob.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's just really cool. And so here and there he was in Westerns and like one time episodes. So I like to think of him as like, the Iowa version of Rick Dalton, from
Sure.
once upon. Armstrong was like south of Mankato, so that was a big place to find movies to buy at like the pawn shops and everything. Most of the time Fairmont was another theater that was 20 miles away. Estherville was about 18 miles away. Spirit Lake too. But most of the time, a lot of my time was spent out here in Sioux Falls because of my sister lived out here.
Oh, sure. And then,
So
like, your, I guess, I mean, I guess I'll kind of jump to this now, but your childhood, like, was movie watching something that you did a lot of while you were younger, or was it something that you kind of fell into as a teenager? Like, what is your kind of, I guess where does your fandom start with the world of movies, and how did it start too? Because it's like, I feel like we all kind of start with like, we all watch kind of the basics, right? Like it's like we'll watch the things like Star Wars and the 80s movies and things like that. But then we kind of find this weird niche and we're like, oh, I'm gonna watch all of these. So kind of how did you fall into movies, and then how did your focus kind of go to these like off the wall cult movies, like the movies that, maybe you and three other people, like you said, have heard about?
Oh, it's pretty cool. I mean, yeah, just like you said, I started off, with like the Disney cartoons, like the Lion King, and everything like that. And then my dad discovered a rental place close to us. And so he picked up like the Star Wars and then pretty soon Spaceballs.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic. And
Yeah.
then we discovered, or he showed me Jaws and Alien, and like those things would come on TV and everything. And yeah, we just rented like all the time. The basics. The like when I was able to spend my make a little money on the side, doing errands and chores and anything like that, we would always buy VHS. Like if we were at some store, like ShopCo, we my sister and I bought so many movies there. And later when I was a teenager, when I started working, during my summers and any other time, that's when I really had some fun renting all sorts of crazy stuff, like at Mr. Movies. The first summer I started renting was when I was 16, but I couldn't rent any rated R
Sure.
movies. But I found a loophole one time. The Toxic Avenger has no rating, so
Okay.
I was able to rent that, and my mind was blown. Of like, oh my gosh, this is off the walls. There's no rules in this movie.
Yeah.
And
Did that kind of like did that kind of I guess something of that nature, like Toxic Avenger, where it's like, you've got gore, you've got there's sexuality in there. Like, how did that kind of like kick open the doors for you, where you're like, all right, how many more loopholes can I find? Like, can I find more non-rated movies, or can I say, oh, I didn't know this was rated R? How do you go on after you watch something like Toxic Avenger that is just so like, mind blowing? Is the best
Right.
word I can think of for it. Like, how do you go forward from there?
Oh, I mean, immediately, it was like the earlier days of IMDb. So like I rented it in 2004, and
Sure.
then I typed it in, and I'm like, okay, yeah, what is this studio called, Troma? I gotta check this out, because
Yeah.
I've seen the pictures and the descriptions and everything, and like everything is crazy in this world, this little studio. So like Troma opened my eyes to like crazy stuff.
Man. Yeah, and it's Troma itself is like a studio filled with crazy product, and that's kind of like brought about some pretty creative minds, like kind of pushed a lot of creative minds into the forefront. What kind of like, I guess maybe we'll go this way. So like, okay, so you turn 17, you have finally got that
Oh,
restriction
yes.
of R-rated movies like out of the way. Do you instantly like just completely throw yourself into the R-rating thing? Like, you're a guy who at least used to purchase a lot of movies, so you would have VHS, DVD, physical media. Like, did you seek out like some of the more obscure titles and some of like the collector's editions and things like that? Was that something that you kind of like, because I know Anchor Bay was a studio that
Oh,
released a lot of like collector's versions on VHS and stuff. Were you somebody that kind of like, honed in on that, or were you just kind of like, you know what, I'm just gonna grab whatever I can find, trash included, like let me just scoop up these movies? How did you go about like, I guess, increasing your encyclopedia of knowledge?
yeah, that's really good. Yeah, Anchor Bay, I always noticed that Best Buy and Suncoast, when Suncoast was a thing. Also, at our nearest Kmart, there were sometimes some cult things, but the thing is, $39.99 in 2004, when you're working like three summer jobs. is a fortune. So I would see like the box set of the Wicker Man, and it's like authentically in the like a wood box. I'm like, oh, someday I will check this out. And I can't rent it right offhand. I remember the Repo Man thing. I had not seen Repo Man yet, but it was in a license plate. And I'm like, oh, all these packages looked really cool. And it like further encouraged me to like, oh, just keep saving and everything. And if you find it, you can rent it. So yeah, it's really funny. I mean, my dad and I would rent rated R stuff like Monty Python's Meaning of Life and From Dusk Till Dawn and everything like that. He showed Falling Down one time on a like Thanksgiving break, and we just thought it was just like the most unique thing. He showed me Apocalypse Now on a Christmas break because our local place was like rent 5 movies for $5 for 5 days, and so we would just get the random stuff. And actually, like the first R-rated movie I bought when I was 17 was Trading Places.
Good one.
It was just, it's not a hard R, or I mean, it's not, it's like the reason why they had to make the rated R, but it was just really funny. I'm like, huh, I'm finally 17 and it's in the $5 bucket. All right, I'll take it.
This'll do it. This will be my pick. Would you say like would you consider your dad kind of the person who kind of opened the door to your appreciation of movies, or would it be kind of like, maybe you opened the door yourself and your dad was kind of like, oh, well, cool. Now that you like this, let me show you these things. How would you kind of go about describing like how, I don't know, maybe how that broadened for you, if it was like if your dad added an extra element of appreciation for you?
Oh, for sure. He added everything and like 2 and 11. My mom's like the complete opposite. She just thinks like even if she's laughing, when the movie ends, she's like, oh, that was so dumb. Like everything is really dumb or hockey, icky as she would sometimes describe it. But my dad encouraged like, hey, let's check this out. Let's rent this. What is this? Flipping through the channels. But yeah, he was pretty knowledge. He is pretty knowledgeable about movies or trying to track something down. So yeah, most of the time, like if he actually didn't even know what it was about, he would like still rent it or buy it. So it was a pretty good time.
It's funny because I feel like my parents were flipped in a way. My mom was the one who really liked movies, and my dad liked going to the movies and liked renting movies so that we could all watch stuff. But his reaction to everything we watched was, oh, that was the stupidest movie that I'd ever seen. Like it was just every movie, this was stupid. This was stupid. Except for Babe, Pig in the City, greatest movie of all time. Racing Stripes was another one that I know that he liked. Just like these crazy movies. But then, like Narrow Margin, Jagged Edge, Starman,
Wow, cool.
the these kind of like 80s crime thrillers. Jeff Bridges was somebody that my dad really liked. So it was like, my dad liked these movies and my mom likes everything. Like, she doesn't, she has people that, does this movie need that much swearing? Does this movie need that much violence? And for me, yes, it does. But for her, I understand that that's not what she likes. But, you get her to sit through a movie, she will be down for pretty much anything. And she was kind of the reason why, like, in those formative movie years for me, like she would be the one who would take us to the video store. And it was like my formative video store years were shortly after the AFI released their first like 100 years, 100 movies list. And it was like trying to check off the movies on that list, but then also like seeing the, you know, people that I liked that were in those movies and trying to find, you know, other things that they were in. I saw my big like thing from that time period for me is the movie Lenny. It's with Dustin Hoffman and it's about Lenny Bruce, the stand-up comic. I
Oh, yes,
love
yeah.
that movie. Love that movie so much. And it's one that's, I don't know if I would call it a cult movie, but it's one that's kind of like in those weird, like in-between space where there are people who remember it, but it's not as well known and loved as, you know, The Graduate, Rain Man, you know, the big Dustin Hoffman movies. But I always feel lucky because it's like, oh, I had the chance to go to the video store and find this random movie on VHS that I picked up just because I liked this actor, because I was interested. And it's kind of like, you know, set me on this course of like, oh, my eyes are open. Like I can experience everything. And it's like, you know, I owe it to that curiosity, but I always go back to the fact too that I do owe it to my mom because she was always so very encouraging of our love for movies. And still to this day, she'll watch anything. Like whatever she can find, she'll watch it. And I always think that's great. So I always think it's cool when it's like, you know, you hear the stories of the parents who are kind of like that influence where they're like, yeah, I like these, so I want you to watch these things. It's just, I don't know. It warms my heart a little bit. So I always get a nice bit of joy for watching. When you are able to, do you plan on kind of playing that role to your kids? Is that something that you're gonna, you know, be like, all right, here we go. It's time for you to watch, you know, such and such a movie. Let me
Oh, right.
do the awakening for you.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's so many good things. It's just the thing is like, ooh, he better not repeat that or out of this stuff. Oh, I gotta fast forward through this. Yeah, it's gonna be hard to find something. But I mean, if you know, going to like the Goonies or The Last Starfighter or anything, like I want to start off like with the 80s, you know, where you know, pretty much like a lot of things from that era are kind of harmless. Are really good to watch. I mean, there's a few scary moments, but like Gremlins is really good. Who Framed Roger Rabbit? You know, just like fun little gems. I want to start with those because like anything else that's like related to the Grinch, we will try to watch.
Yeah, that's good. It's funny because it's like so many of those 80s movies would put kids in peril, but like it never felt like, I don't know, it felt dangerous but not dangerous. Does that make any sense at all? Because like, you know, I think of things like Cloak and Dagger, right? You know, it's this kid who has these government plans and he's trying. War Games is another great example. Like these are kids that are in these terrifying situations and there are people out to get them. But yet, you know, like you kind of know that they're going to triumph by the end of the movie. So it's like you don't necessarily feel super scared for their lives the whole movie.
Yeah, it's just like there's a little danger, but you know, everything's gonna be safe. It's not like things that are filmed today. Like Stranger Things is just chaos and peril and everything. And there's just something about 80s that's just like it's so fun.
It's good stuff. It's a good time period. Oh, that makes me want to, after this month is over, to kind of like blow through like Explorers and you know, movies like that where it's just those 80s adventure movies where kids were like, I don't know, just going on crazy wild things that would happen to him. Daryl is one for that I want to watch again too,
Oh,
because it's like I haven't seen that probably since the 1980s, and I remember very little of it, but that was one that my dad liked as well. So yeah, just great adventure movies in the 80s. You know, we're here in October, which is Halloween season, which is what I always, you know, kind of feel is, even though we like horror movies all year round, there's something special about trying to watch as many as possible in October. Are you an October horror movie guy? Are you somebody that likes to try and make sure you cram in the classic horror movies this time of the year?
With the very little time I have, I try to cram in like the major ones, but when I see people do the 31 days, I'm like, how do you guys do this? Oh yeah, that's right. You don't have kids. But
That's right.
yeah,
Exactly.
my wife actually just watched A Nightmare Before Christmas, and I think that was like her actual first time of seeing it
Oh,
yesterday.
wow.
Yeah. And she grew up in a town close to me, but the thing is, like, yeah, she didn't have cable or anything like that. So yeah, we come from like two different paths. It's pretty funny. But yeah, I try to see the yeah, like the big ones for October. I like watch Rocky Horror and the one I always have to watch is Halloween 3.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Because that is an essential like consumer of the 80s. It's just perfect. And yeah, most of the Halloween sequels are really good.
It's a fun series. I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Halloween 3. I love
Oh yeah.
Season of the Witch. That's one I can watch all the time. You kind of touched upon it a little bit here that this was your first your wife's first time watching Nightmare Before Christmas. How does she kind of take to your like love and passion for movies? Is that something that you're able to kind of like get her to watch things that you want her to see, or is it kind of like it's kind of separate? Because I know different couples have it different, where it's like, oh, all right, well, you can make somebody watch something and they'll be like, all right, fine, I'll do it. And other couples are like, nope, look, that's your thing, you enjoy it. What's it kind of like? What's the vibe kind of for you? Are you ever kind of like on that page where it's like, I want you to watch this, can you watch it with me? And she's like, heck yeah, let's do it. How does it work for you?
Yeah, when we have time, we yeah, when we get to officially watch something, yeah, usually I'm surprised by her choices too. She started watching Totally Killer,
Oh,
the one
sure.
on Prime, and she's like, oh, you gotta see this. It's like Back to the Future and Halloween like smashed together, and I'm like, okay, that is right up our alley. And we're actually yeah, for her birthday, we're actually going to the Thanksgiving movie, the Eli Roth. And I told her, like, yeah, ever since I was a senior in high school, I want to see this for real. And so yeah, she's actually like really cool about pretty much our date night is basically, if the kids are asleep, let's catch something kind of cool. It doesn't have to be brand new. We don't actually even have Netflix. But yeah, like the Amazon Prime, she's just like, and she is always into, she actually told me, like, I just want to watch the new things. I want to see all the stuff coming out. And you just watch the same thing over and over.
I get that. I get that. I would do that too. I would totally watch. If I didn't want to see everything that was out, like compulsively want to make sure that I can, like, it's like I feel like my finger has to be on the pulse of pop culture so I know what's out there. But like if I didn't have to do that, yeah, I would probably watch the same like 10 movies all the time, especially in October, because it's like there are movies that I love that I would, I would watch all month long. However, there are a bunch of horror movies that I've never seen, and so I'm kind of like, I've got to try and watch these movies. And this, doing those challenges, those are kind of the things that make me so it's like, oh, I have a reason to finally sit down and watch. I think a couple of years ago was the first time I ever saw The Dead Zone, which was great. And it's like, if I can give myself a reason to finally see something, it's awesome. But yeah, at the same
Oh
time, I want to watch The Exorcist for like the 100th time. Like
yes.
that would make me very happy. So I get it. I get it. Growing up, were you a like Were you a big Halloween person? Did you do the trick-or-treating thing? Were you like, having these like costumes that you were super excited about? Was Halloween something that you kind of like put a lot of passion and love into?
I mean, I really liked the holiday. I was like, yay, getting candy. Sometimes we would actually get like a pencil or just unique stuff. I'm like, yay, I can draw with this. I mean, it was, but I also too, I was like scared of the decorations, and I did not like haunted houses or scary music. But later on, it really grew on me. I was just kind of like late blooming to a holiday like this, and then pretty soon like holiday parties with friends, and and then random stuff on TV, and even like not really scary but really fun things that they would have on Halloween, like Mr. Boogity.
The like
Yeah, that was
Disney
like,
movie.
oh yeah, yes. I was like, oh, this is fun and scary at the same time. It's just like a perfect balance.
Those movies, I feel bad because I feel like I grew up just a little earlier. And so I kind of missed out on that peak time because, I hear people talk about stuff like, Mr. Boogity, Phantom of the Mall. Is that another like
Oh, yes.
Disney? Those kind of made for Disney movies that were like horror lights, kind of that way to get
Right.
kids into horror movies. And I feel like that was just after my time where I had already kind of latched on to like, I'm gonna watch grown-up scary movies because I'm an adult, But I always enjoy that those movies exist. They're never like the home run for me as they are for other people. But I have to remember those movies weren't made for me. They didn't, I wasn't, I'm not the target audience there. And so it's like, if those will be movies that kind of give kids a jumping off point, more power to them, more movies like that. And I always think about that when I talk about how much I don't like Hocus Pocus, because I don't like Hocus Pocus, but I understand, I understand like that it is this kind of Halloween themed movie that has elements of scariness to it, and it's something that plays those scary elements in a way where it can kind of like creep kids out a little bit, but not so much where it completely turns them off to horror completely. And maybe somewhere down the road they'll be like, oh, that was fun. Now I need to watch, Trick or Treat or something that's,
Oh yes, or the
a
craft.
Halloween, yeah, or yeah, The Craft. That's a great one. But like just something that kind of like ratchets it up a notch because it's just, and that's one of the reasons too, where it's like, unless provoked, I will try not to go off on a tangent on how much I dislike Hocus Pocus. Because I do see the good in it. And the sequel was awesome.
Oh, that is pretty
That's
cool.
my hot take. That's my hot take.
Oh yeah.
I just think, I think, I think Halloween season is a lot of fun. Did you have any costumes that you still kind of hold fond memories of? Were you somebody that dressed up, to do the trick-or-treating? Did you ever have one where you were like, this was it. This was the magic costume.
Oh, very few and far between we'd have pictures of those things. But the first one we did, like once we moved to Iowa, my sister was a rocker. It was a Barbie toy line, Barbie and the Rockers, and then I was Mickey Mouse, like my first one. And I can send you the picture of it. It's pretty funny.
That's funny.
My parents have this picture of me from middle school, and I'm like, to this day, I don't remember wearing this, but it was the Scream, the Ghost Face,
Oh, sure.
and like just a bad black cloak, and just me doing like a boo kind of gesture because I didn't have a knife.
Yeah.
Another time, I mean, looking back on it now, there was a time we had a Jason hockey mask,
Okay.
and oh man, I would play with that a lot. And I would think it was like Casey Jones too. So
Yeah.
I dressed that way, and then I had a cape, and yeah, that one would be up there too.
Oh, that's fun. That's fun. Yeah, the hockey mask was kind of like an all-purpose Halloween costume because it was like,
Oh,
you know, you could do Jason as scary, you could do Casey Jones as cool, or you could like, I don't know, kind of take your original put an original twist on it. I remember I did we made a like a mask out of like plaster of Paris. So it was like we put the straws in the nose and put like something to keep the mouth open so that I could breathe. And my mom like wrapped my face with those plaster strips. And then we had this like, you know, like a kind of a mask. And it was we had one, I kept one eye hole, but one that I didn't cut a hole in, and we used like glow in the dark paint and put that over the eye, and then like put like blood dripping down the side of it too. And you know, it because it's just a plaster mask of the face, it had like echoes of Michael Myers, like probably Michael Myers in like the sequels because they never really looked that good, but it had these like echoes of that, and I was like, yeah. So I bought like a like one of those fake knives and just would be this crazed killer. Like that was my Halloween costume, just made up this thing
Oh,
completely. And I love that. Like
that's fantastic.
there's yeah, there's so much fun that you can have, like just doing random things for Halloween. So that's yeah, that's one that I kind of a memory that I kind of treasure. I think there's a picture of me with the knife like up to my younger brother's throat too. And he was always a good sport, so he would kind of act like he was dead. So that was fun. But yeah, it was good. It was good times. It was good times. What else do I want to ask you about the Halloween season or just your kind of general taste? Actually, you know what? I'll veer off with one kind of non-movie question, and then we'll actually dive into our featured movie of the week. So my non-movie question is, how's Parenthood, Seth? Like, do you like, you know, Jonah is he your only, or do you have multiple kids? I don't know exactly.
I have two sons.
Oh, okay.
Our oldest is Eli. He is
Okay,
four,
that's right.
and our youngest is Jonah,
Sure,
and
sure.
he's just I think like November 3rd he'll be like 17 months old. So
How is the parenthood experience going for you? How like are you kind of like finding those moments of joy when you get to look at your sons,
yes.
and then also having those moments of nightmares too, because I do like hearing both. I like hearing the good and the bad. But I'm just curious, like, how did you was this something that you had kind of like as your grand plan when you were growing up that you're like, yeah, I want to be a dad.
I mean, I we had waited and everything, and
Yeah.
we were really trying and everything, but yeah, I thought when I was younger, I'm like, I'm just gonna travel and make little documentaries, make movies or anything like that, and that really wasn't part of the plan. But yeah, like once I got really older, I'm like, oh man, I really want somebody to see, like everything I like and see how this goes. And I mean, it's definitely had its ups and downs. There has been days where like, oh, we could send Eli to military school. He's off the rails today. Yeah, things like that. But no, it's just like, yeah, I'm starting to realize like how hard it was for my parents to raise my sister and I. So,
Sure.
but yeah, I really love it. It's fun, and I get to cosplay with my kids too.
Awesome. That's a lot of fun. Yeah, your pictures that you post from all the times that you get to dress up, that always seems like that's something that you enjoy a lot, but I think something that they will really like, especially as they get older, like something that they'll kind of cherish too, that they were able to have those fun moments. So that's super cool. I really like that.
Oh yeah, it's Halloween is a blast with them.
Good times. Seth, the one thing that's kind of cool about this is like we haven't we've known each other now for probably the same length of time that we've been planning to have this podcast, but I don't know that we've ever had like a sit down conversation where we've really just talked about like, oh, who are you? Where you're from? What's your story? And now I feel like I know you really well, and this has just been great so far. I've really
Oh,
enjoyed getting a chance to chat with you like this. This has been awesome. But let's get to the topic at hand, shall we? Let's talk
yes.
about our featured movie of the week, and this week's movie is Phantom of the Paradise.
20th Century Fox presents Phantom of the Paradise, a gothic horror story.
What was that?
A beautiful love story. Hold love, baby. Like a circus. A cinematic odyssey through the rock universe. From Greece to glitter. Wow! And beyond. The story of a sound. The man who created it. The girl who sang it. The monster who stole it. And the phantom who haunts the paradise. The ultimate rock palace. Phantom of the Paradise.
My music is for Phoenix. Only she can sing it. Anyone else that tries, die.
So that's the first time that I have done where we actually kind of like watch the trailer together.
Oh, fantastic.
And I kind of feel like I want to keep doing that from now on, because there is some kind of joy in both watching the trailer, especially for a movie like this. That it really just kind of stirs up like all of those memories and feelings for this movie. I'll just say this before we get started with their questions. Phantom of the Paradise fucking rules. Like, what a great
I
movie.
agree. I agree wholeheartedly, 100% with you.
Man, oh man. Just so awesome. Before we kind of like dive into our discussion, I'll ask a couple of like starter questions. So, Seth, my first question is, in your own words, what is Phantom of the Paradise about? What is its plot, kind of themes? Like, how would you describe Phantom of the Paradise?
Oh, it is just like just this neat little package of okay, it's definitely a 70s picture. It's like recovering from the 60s of like the hippies and everything, and then in the 70s it's pretty much glam rock and how far an artist wants to go. So basically it follows a naive piano player, Wenzel Leach, who just would do anything ever to get his music released. But his style is completely different than everything that's big at the time, like the Beach Boys ripoff group, like all the other glam rock. He's doing his own thing and his music gets stolen. At that point then he becomes the Phantom, and this is an obvious callback to Phantom of the Opera. Later there's like some themes of selling your soul to the devil for fame. Faust is mentioned, just like all these themes of how far you have to go for fame, You know what price it's gonna cost. It could be your soul, it could be your in this case, like his face and his teeth are quickly changed. So yeah, it a little picture of the Dorian Gray, Phantom of the Opera, and then just callbacks to like 30s horror, glam rock. Oh my gosh, it's just the tone changes all the time.
It's a cornucopia of
Oh yeah.
of like elements that they use from other things. I just it's just a blast. Do you remember, Seth, the first time that you saw this movie, and what was your experience with this movie that first time?
Okay, so the first time that I had ever seen it was back in around this time, or maybe like even in November of 2008. I was living with my parents at the time. I was working on and off, and I was also going to my second year of college. We were living in Iowa, and like one night I was just flipping through the channels, and the Fox movie channel came on, and this was like I don't know where this was in the movie, but all these crazy things started, these crazy visuals. This guy going around in this mask, and I'm like, oh, is this like a superhero? Because it's very much like Batman 1966 is what it felt like to me, like when I first saw it. And so at the time, so it would just play in the middle of the night, and then a few weeks later, I caught it again. But the thing is, it was always like in the middle of the movie, and I'm like, to be honest, I'm like, I don't know what the story is, I don't know what's going on, but this is so interesting, and I have got to track this down. And I sounded like a mad person trying to describe it to someone. I'm like, oh, he's got this mask, he's going around, and he's jeopardizing the thing. So one time I had to really crack down. I'm like, maybe I'll just have this play until the end of it, and then write down who the people are, because I've done that all the time. And so that way I can go to IMDb. And so I eventually found out the title of it, and eventually got the DVD about a year later, like once I found out all the information.
Was this something like, I know it piqued your curiosity, but when you were finally able to kind of watch the whole thing from start to finish, was it something that right off the bat you instantly just clicked with? Or was it something where you were like, I need a minute? Because it's out there. Like, it's an out there movie, so I can understand that second reaction if that was the case.
I think for the very first time, it was just a bit too much, and I did not like it. But the thing is, I was like caught in the middle of this. I'm like, I don't know what's going on or anything. Then about 3 days later, I'm like, oh, what is this thing? And I have to track it down. So yeah, it just started off as a hate thing, and then it became like, oh, I have to find this. This is like the missing piece.
The first time. So my story with this movie starts off as embarrassment, and then turns into like just the love that I have for it now. The first time I ever heard this movie referenced, and somebody said Phantom of the Paradise, I was like, "Oh, you mean the Kiss movie? Kiss meets the
Oh
Phantom of
yes.
the Park." And I was convinced that the person I was talking to just got the name of the Kiss movie wrong. And they're like, "No, what's the Kiss movie?" And I'm like, "It's the made for
Oh.
TV movie where they go to the theme park." And he's like, "This is not what I'm talking about at all." And I'm like, "Well, what are you talking about?" And he's like, "Phantom of the Paradise, the Phantom of the Opera, like 70s rock version of Phantom of the Opera." And I'm like, "What?
Yeah.
And then, you know, at that time period, Tumblr was really big. And I would start to see like random pictures of like of this movie on Tumblr. And I was like, oh my God, this looks great. I think I did a search for it. And it just so happened to be streaming on Amazon Prime. So I was like, okay, we're doing this. And so I watched it on Amazon Prime. And as soon as the movie was over, I pulled up my Amazon account and ordered the Blu-ray. I was so into this movie. Like, I just thought it was wild. Definitely in the same vein as, like, you know, Rocky Horror Picture Show, mm-hmm. Shock Treatment. They said in the trailer, Grease. It definitely has, like, a Grease vibe to it, too. Just a much more edgy version of mm-hmm. Grease. Like, it, you know, the musicals that kind of push the boundaries just a little bit and kind of come off a little bit like, you know, we're a musical, but we're going to have a little bit of attitude to it. And I just, I was vibing with this thing. Like, I just thought it was great. And it's kind of like, you know, I've been in love with it ever since. And it's one of those where it's like, every time I go back to it, I either will notice something, you know, that I didn't notice before, or like a theme about it will hit me just a little bit differently. I think this time, well, kind of watching through it, it was the, you know, of course they say the whole thing is based on Faust, and mm-hmm. you know, hearing those little bits and how it's this, you know, man selling his soul to this demon of rock music so that he can become famous. But it's not just him, it's Phoenix too selling her soul so that she could become famous as well. And it's just this, man, it's just a crazy ride. And I love this movie so much. The my last question before we start kind of diving about the movie then, Seth, is just the blanket. Why Phantom of the Paradise? What is it about this movie for you that you, you know, you would choose to speak about this movie? Why this one?
I think it's just a wild ride that I try to show everyone. And I'm like, you know what? I understand if you don't like it, that's okay. You know, we'll still be friends and everything. I think it's just like my connection with it was just so crazy. Cause, you know, you get to see it and then, you find out what it is. And then you, you know, you find the DVD and you watch it like four times in one weekend, that kind of thing. And you know, I've always liked Rocky Horror and you know, just anything unique, but this was just a wild ride. And it's like, I hope a lot more people might have access to it if it was like streaming for free somewhere. I just wish like the word of mouth would get out there.
And it is currently streaming on the Criterion channel, which you know, not really the most subscribed to streaming service, but you know, one that I think if people do subscribe to it, they will find a wealth of movies there that aren't just the, you know, what they would consider the typical Criterion collection fare. I think they're every month they kind of do like a off the beaten path category. Like this last month was like high school horror, and this month has been like I think 80s horror, and it's been just a wild selection of things. So I couldn't recommend that streaming service enough, especially because now, you know, you get the opportunity to watch this movie on there. But it's great. It's worth purchasing too. What are the things that kind of leap out to you about this movie? Are you is it the characters, stories, music? I'm sure it's a little bit of all of it, but what's the first thing that when you think of this movie, your mind kind of goes to?
When I'm telling people about it, I'm like, this is, I think it mostly rests on the personalities of these characters. Cause it's just seems like this neat little package, but it feels like there's like five things going on. You know, it feels like the villain story. And then like kind of the anti-hero, kind of the, you know, the Phantom, and then the up and coming Phoenix, and then the guy that's kind of tossed in and just kind of like a slapstick David Bowie is Gary Graham. And he's I was just watching an interview, and he goes, you know, I'm not exactly the comic relief. I'm just, you know, like a comic character, and I'm tossed in this. And you know, I just think it's such a colorful movie too. It's very splashy. It's original. Most of all, too, is the wild ride we get from Paul Williams as Swan.
Yes. Man, what a villain. Like, what an awesome villain. I think a highly underrated villain. Like, he feels, you had mentioned earlier that you feel like this movie kind of is, it's like a comic book, even though it's not based off of a comic book. It's based off of all these things, but it has that visual style that's very, you know, very comic booky. And he, as a comic book villain, is like this devilish figure that, you know, his look is just eccentric as it is. He doesn't look like, you know, he's not wearing some over the top comic book villain costume. He's just dressed in like a suit, but there's just something about the way he carries himself that just feels diabolical. It feels like there's something not right about him. I don't know, man. And he's charming. Like,
yes, he will swindle you.
The thing that shocks me is, it's like, you know, you look at him and like, you don't think Paul Williams could have possibly been a 70s heartthrob, but then he starts to talk and sing, and you're like, oh my God, I get it. I get why he was a 70s heartthrob, because people see beyond, you know, some of the looks, and they find just this, you know, incredibly talented person. But here, man, what a vicious dude. I really like him in this movie. Great pick for him. I think for me, the thing that always like that makes this movie stand out, and it's such a small thing amongst all of these other incredible things, that mask is incredible. Love the Phantom Mask so much. Guillermo del Toro had a like traveling exhibit that went to the Twin Cities that was like his things from his house, his movie props and decorations. They kind of went so you could kind of see what he keeps. And he's got, you know, costumes from his movie. But he has I don't know if it's a replica or the exact mask that was used in this movie. And they had it on display there. And just looking at it, I was like, God, I love that mask so much. I just think it's so cool. And then, you know, the crazy thing is that Winslow has to go through all of this terrible stuff to get put in a super cool mask. I mean, he hates it. He hates that he has to wear this mask because of what's happened to him. But man, like it's a badass look. I think if we're going to have our hero or our anti-hero kind of, you know, look kind of scary, I think this is a really good costume. Talk to me about your feelings towards Winslow, the costume, the character, the actor. Like, how do you feel about this guy as the center of the movie?
Oh, I thoroughly enjoy Winslow Leach, and you know, it is a very, I feel this is a very Brian De Palma moment, is because Brian De Palma seems to me like he adds like a gigantic twist. So I think of like how crazy the twist is in Dressed to Kill. What I see him do with the giant twist is take the naive artist. I mean, he's, you know, like Elton, he's going to be the next Elton John and everything, and rock music basically destroys that, and he goes into a completely different direction. So I really liked how talented he was, and then at a certain point in time, you know, basically becomes like a Darth Vader to the group, and becomes haunted from like everything that he was trying to build.
Yeah. But still, like, still feels like he's I'm going to say this, and I don't know if I'm right, but it feels like he's kind of actively seeking redemption too, like still looking for that fame and validation, because they established pretty early on that he's got a temper, so he's certainly capable of being aggressive, but he has this look of like he's kind of a nerd. He looks like he would be kind of a gentle nerd, and you know, I think while he kind of carries himself that way when he's doing his music, once somebody kind of challenges his music, he gets aggressive. And you know, I'm thinking about in particular that moment, it's near the very beginning of the movie when they first talk to him about, you know, hey, you should give your music to Swan and he'll find somebody to sing it for you. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm the only one who can sing my music, and like, you know, throws the guy up against the wall, and not what you would expect from this kind of meek songwriter character. But then, you know, of course he puts on the mask, has his teeth pulled and replaced with these metal chompers. He looks vicious now. He looks like somebody who would be aggressive. And then with that voice too, the kind of like shocking monstrous voice. Yeah, he has become the Phantom. And yeah, I think Winslow is a great character. Just all across the board, from where he starts into where he, you know, where he comes at the end of the movie, like just a great character. Another kind of highlight of this movie for me, and I imagine for you too, is Jessica Harper, her, like, part of my trifecta of like Jessica Harper movies that I love, between this, Suspiria, and Shock Treatment. Like, she was just kind of the highlight of three movies that I don't think were appreciated as much as they should have been probably back in their day. Mm-hmm. Talk for a little bit, if you will, about Jessica Harper, about Phoenix. What do you, how do you think she does in this movie? How instrumental do you think she is to the, what occurs in the movie?
You know, honestly, I'm going to start off to say, like, you nailed it with the trifecta of Jessica Harper, with this, Suspiria, and Shock Treatment. I think like those, everything she touched turned into gold in my eyes, like Colt's gold. Yeah. Her story is, it just feels like another little fun twist in the movie. It's like, it feels like, oh, this is Phoenix's movie now. This, we're introducing this in, you know, the up and coming star, and she just plays it fantastic. She's talented, and you know, you get to see her chuckle sometimes, and then eventually fall for the wrong things, you know, whatever Swan promises her. But yeah, it's just a fantastic performance, and she's, you know, sort of in the crosshairs of, you know, the bad producer, and then also wants to, you know, find a partner, and then she also has to deal with it like an absolute diva.
It's that notion of how fame corrupts. Because she is looked at as kind of like this pure soul when Winslow kind of sees her waiting for auditions, right? Like, she just kind of is this, you know, person who he's kind of in awe of and wants to help her and wants her to succeed. And then once she kind of gets to that point of like, well, now she's got a chance at it. It's kind of like that desire for fame takes over, you know, until she has a change of heart, you know, once things kind of click into place where the movie, you know, nears its conclusion. But yeah, I think she handles all of it really, really well. I think she does such a good job. I feel like she really is one of the more unappreciated actresses. Mm-hmm. And it, part of it could be because she had this kind of like era of movies that were where she did a great job, but the movies weren't massive hits. Like I think Suspiria might have been the biggest hit out of all of these, but I feel like all of these kind of had like their cult following years after they were kind of released and didn't quite succeed. Shock Treatment, I think you would still be hard-pressed to call that necessarily a classic. I love it. I think Shock Treatment is great.
Oh.
But I still think it's one that people are you know, still discovering. It hasn't quite reached the audience that these other two have. But I feel like we really kind of missed the ball with her, because I think she's incredibly talented. Versatile, like just an actress mm-hmm. that can do a lot of different things, from being like an ingenue to also being somebody with like this undercurrent of strength. And I think this movie and Shock Treatment both have this moment where she kind of flips from being nice to kind of being a little power hungry. And I think she handles that change really, really well. What for you are some of the scenes and I guess moments that really jump out as ones that kind of like help define this movie as a cult classic for you?
I would have to say the first, I think one of the cooler shots was the split right down the middle, split screen mm-hmm. of when the Phantom puts the car bomb yeah. in the car, and it's you know, like a stage thing for these guys that are very similar to like the Beach Boys and Sha-na-na and
yeah,
all those guys. That was just such a cool story part. And then also Garrett Graham just eating the scenery and the tiny little tribute to Psycho, where Phantom sneaks in on the shower and with yeah. a plunger this time, that just like certified this as a like okay, this is so tongue-in-cheek, and yes, this is a reference to Psycho, but we're just gonna go crazy with it.
Yeah.
I also think how the music changes and the live performances really make it over the top, because you know, and eventually it's like an Alice Cooper concert mm-hmm. and you know, the electrocution things, it's just like so many cool concerts that we don't get these days
yeah.
are in this.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that kind of sets it apart from you know, those other musicals we talked about, Rocky Horror, Shock Treatment, Grease, is that it has the songs are being performed. It's not like they're elements that are to help tell the story, which they are, but it's not like, you know, the characters deep in thought and the way of expressing their thinking is by singing the song. It's not that. It is, you know, they are performing this song for an audience, and yet the song that they're singing is still connected to what the story is. And they do such a like theatrical presentation of these songs. This is a movie for me, and I think we've talked about this before, but this is a movie for me that I would love to see at the State.
Yes,
just to see this movie on the big screen would be incredible. I think it's so fun and so out there that I think, you know, you'd find a lot of it would find a lot of new eyes and people mm-hmm. that would really appreciate just how kind of like bonkers it is, but good bonkers. Like it sometimes floors me just how good this movie is, because it has it has Brian De Palma at the helm. Like, this is the guy who went on to be, you know, for at least the 70s and 80s and even the 90s too, like, went on to be a really remarkable and renowned filmmaker. And, you know, he kind of started with something like this that is so, like, tongue-in-cheek and
off the wall.
Like, just such a good time. I think getting to see these theatrical performances on a big screen would just be... just push this movie into a whole nother level as far as people go, you know, with appreciating it. I just think it's great. I just think this movie is great.
It is fantastic.
Yeah. Trying to think what else I want to ask. Any other little, like, tidbits for you that kind of stand out, or things about this movie that you want to make sure that you push out there? Because I think, you know, you said that the style of the music changes a lot, and that that band, the Juicy Fruits, they're very much like the Beach Boys and Sha-Na-Na, where they're kind of like this 70s band that still has kind of like a throwback to the you know, surfer, almost doo-wop, like, kind of feeling to the music that they do. But they even, like, change as the movie goes along to kind of, like, mesh with whatever the new hot sound is. It's just wild. Like, I guess, talk from an appreciation of the music standpoint. Like, how does the music in this movie sit for you? I don't know that I would ever really say it stands out as much as, like, the catchiness of those other musicals, but there's still something, like, in the midst of watching this movie that it really locks you in and engages you. So I guess talk about your thoughts on the music in this movie.
What I also found that was really cool, and I didn't notice this until I, you know, saw it for the 20th time or so, it's the Juicy Fruits and those guys, like the same group of three or four guys, are all the rock groups throughout the whole movie. So they eventually get to Alice Cooper. So it's like they're not really succeeding. They have until they put their finger on the pulse of what's new. So you know, anything up and coming in the 70s, it, you know, all the Beach Boys, that's over and done with. And now it's like we need to shock our audience. We need to give them to Alice Cooper. And then also too, they kind of just like spoof all different types of genres when the song is finally written and everybody's singing it. There's like a country group and you know, Swan Says No. And then they find Garrett Graham, who's quintessentially like the I want to say he's like the David Bowie. A flat out farce of David Bowie, and he's so off tune. He's such a diva. He's hard to work with, but the, you know, he's got the look, and we can change the sound. So this is going to be money for us. While Phoenix is also like the really good talented who's never actually like looked at, you know, except for a pretty face. But you know, it's a really good spoof of the music industry.
Yeah. Like it presents it in a way that is, you know, joking, like certainly mocking, but also I feel like through that mocking, there's a weird, like almost uncomfortable honesty at times, because like there's that scene at the beginning where Swan has all of the girls in the room, like, and they're just kind of like, we need to touch each other because Swan is watching. And it's like, this is uncomfortable music producer vibes here. I can imagine that a room like this exists where producers are like, you show me what you can give me, and then maybe I will listen to what you have to sing. And it's just, I feel like it just kind of like, is funny, yes, and is over the top, but I feel like it's also trying to, in between that stuff, really say something about, you know, what the the downsides of celebrity and downsides of success can be. And man, that just adds a whole nother layer to this onion of a movie.
Yes, that is the perfect way to put it. Cause yeah, it's just, there's layers. It is pretty much a fun package. It's a fun onion. It's a fun present to go through.
It's a fun onion.
you're the best. I also like the, there's this little part where he's going through the Rolodex, or the secretary's going through the Rolodex, and it's a list of eccentric people. Like Swan can't stand George McGovern.
Yeah.
Bette Midler is one of them.
Yeah, David Geffen was on there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just this weird stab to the recording industry, to politics, to pretty much everything. Like Swan just wants to be like the power, and it's so funny that our former governor is mentioned in this.
right. Yeah. My last kind of question about this movie, and unless you have other things that you want to make sure we include, but my last question about this movie is, if you were to sell this movie to somebody who's never seen it, and this is something that it sounds like you've definitely done before, as trying to recommend this movie to people that haven't seen it before, what's your selling point? Is there like a scene? Is it just the general idea of it? Like how would you pitch this to people if they've never seen this movie before?
That has actually happened to me. Like on a, I met up with a friend, and we were having lunch, and I'm like, oh, you got to see Phantom of the Paradise. I'm like, you're familiar with Rocky Horror. You've seen Rocky Horror, but the thing is, like, back then I'm like, this is gonna take me like an hour and a half to explain this movie. So yeah. I'm thinking, okay, so the best way I
just
can
just watch it,
like it's a hint of Rocky Horror meets 70s music. There's kind of like a gay hero in it, the Garrett Graham character.
Yeah.
And it tackles the music industry. It's just this multifaceted. You have to see it for yourself, and you have to have an open mind as you watch it.
Campy, spooky, deep, funny, great music, great great costumes and production design. Like so much of this movie takes place in the paradise, and the way that theater is set up is just gorgeous, because they change, you know, what's happening on stage changes so frequently, but everything just looks, I don't know, I just think it looks great. Like, and because De Palma's at the helm, the movie itself just looks fantastic too. This is, for me, this is one of those movies that is just super underrated. Really great. And I always take a little bit of joy, as I imagine you do too, like when people discover it and they're kind of like, oh, that was so good. That was so good. Because it's like, oh, cool. More people know about this movie. And it just, this is one that I hope that people kind of like, you know, take our conversation. We did, I feel like, Seth, we did a really good job of not spoiling this movie. Like,
oh yes.
And that's always something that I'm kind of like, I don't really care if we spoil the movie or not, because a lot of times it's movies that are, I guess, people know or have seen multiple times, and it's kind of the movies that are more popular, with a little bit here and there, but it's like, you know, they've been out for a while, and still like, well, we can talk about the ending, we can talk about this, we can talk about that.
Yeah.
But I feel almost a little protective this movie, because I want people to find out for themselves.
Yeah, and that is a fantastic way, because there is an ending, there is a conclusion. I want people to experience it and then kind of take away from it. I myself am just bummed if something gets spoiled for me. You know, and I personally try to make it a mission, like, okay, even if a movie is popular and you know, everybody knows the ending, like, I don't even spoil Planet of the Apes.
Sure.
I don't try to I try to tell everybody, like, you're gonna love the twist in Book of Eli. And I like I don't even ruin it. I leave it at that. So yes, I'm yeah, it you did a great job at protecting the ending and the conclusion to this. And it seems like, you know, if the writing had changed or anything, or if they wanted to try to do a sequel, I read somewhere they wanted to make Swan like a powerful empire somehow, or you know, an ultra powerful record producer. But you know, honestly, I'm like, sequel or not, this is fine on its own.
And I mean, I think like I am too. Perfectly. This movie is great on its own. This is a movie I can watch over and over again and just still like love, not necessarily need any more. But sometimes you get so like attached to the characters that, man, you're kind of like, well, what would we do next? What would the next part of the story be? And so I think for that point, it'd be like, oh, what would happen next? But yeah, I think as far as this movie as a one and done is concerned, it is Chef's Kiss. Just an excellent movie. I love
Oh, same here.
Phantom of the Paradise. Seth, this has been like just an absolute blast finally getting to
Oh,
chat with you
yeah.
about this movie, about life. You're not out of the woods yet. The last segment of the show is a thing I like to call the Fat Five. These are five rapid fire-ish questions. They're kind of like a just a general gauge of your love of movies. So Seth, are you ready for the Fat Five?
Oh, bring it to me.
All right, here we go. Question number one. What is your favorite movie of all time?
Oh my gosh, this changes all the time, every week. Oh boy. This is just gonna sound like such a ridiculous choice, but I am just addicted to the movie Better Off Dead with John Cusack. And that is just it holds up. I saw it at the right time, and it always cheers me up. And it just makes me die from laughing. I quote it like almost every day. But yeah, I would have to say Better Off Dead would have to be up there. And
Awesome.
Jaws.
I think Jaws is one of those that's like almost everybody, they everybody might not say it, but everybody's thinking
Yeah,
it.
I would personally put that. See the
Question two. Oh, go ahead.
oh see the thing I love about Jaws is when Eli was born, he was actually born on the anniversary of the release of Jaws. It was like the
Oh, wow.
44th anniversary, but I'm like, you know, this is kind of a big deal. I remember when this was like the 30th anniversary. So
Yeah.
yeah,
Wow.
I just wanted to add that.
Oh, it's painful to kind of go through like the big anniversaries of movies, like go through one, and then it feels like 10 minutes later you're going through like the next one, but it's actually like 15 years later. Getting old sucks, Seth. It sucks. Question two is kind of a two-parter. The question is, who are your favorite, some of your favorite actors and actresses? If you have a top one of each, your favorite actor, your favorite actress, name them. But who are some of those people that you are like completely excited to get a chance to see in the movies?
When it comes to actors and actresses, I seem to like really enjoy the cult people, or like the side people, or even character actors, because you get to see a just a wild character if it's like a specifically character actor driven person. The actor I really like the most, you know. that it was that his chef's kiss to me was the unbearable massive weight. Basically, yeah. Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, yeah.
I just love seeing how he just really carries it. I don't think he's ever said no to like any ridiculous idea. I really appreciate Nicolas Cage. But otherwise, character actors like Harry Dean Stanton, Tracy Walter. Oh, he was in Batman in Repo Man. Sure, just like actors that really carried. Tim Blake Nelson also.
Yes,
is just a really really good actor. Actresses. Of course, it's going to be the Colts people. Jessica Harper would be there. Susan Sarandon, I really dug. Kate Winslet, I really really like.
Yeah.
Especially Eternal Sunshine. That was just such a good actress role.
Yes. Yes. So good. So good. Yeah, those are good choices. I find myself being a that guy where it's like, you know, you're sitting watching in a movie and like all of a sudden somebody comes on and you might not know their name off the top of your head, but you're like, ah, that guy, and he was in this, and I love that guy. Like I always love
that guy.
Yeah, it makes you feel like you're in good hands. Like the movie is in good hands because that person is in it. Always enjoy that moment. I had one recently because I had finally seen the movie Take Shelter with Michael Shannon and Jessica Chastain. Thought that was a very, very good movie. And there are a couple of that guys in the movie. Shea Whigham, I really, really like. But then the guy who plays his boss at the construction place is somebody that's popped up in like pretty much all of the Mike Flanagan Netflix shows. He was in the Halloween Kills, I think, as the kid who was the kid who saw Michael Myers like as a grown-up. I love doing the it's that guy, because it's like that there's something about those people that just make whatever movie they're in just a little bit better. So question number three, usually the question would be, who is your favorite director? I like to ask it a little bit differently. The question is, if there is a director who released a movie tomorrow, you wouldn't need to see a trailer, wouldn't need to know the cast, wouldn't even need to know what the movie is about. You would just need to know that they are directing it. Whose movie would that be?
Oh, quite a few.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would have to be Tarantino.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I feel like that's a pretty solid answer. I think there's something interesting about a Tarantino picture that you don't really need to know much else about, to know that you're going to get something, that's going to be fun to watch. So yeah, good answer. It's a good answer, and it's one that I get a lot. So, question four, is there a movie out that you haven't seen yet that you're really excited to see, or a movie that's set to come out that as soon as it's released you are ready to be there, day and date if possible? What are the movies that you are looking forward to seeing?
The one I'm behind on is The Creator, and that just looks fantastic. Sure. The one I'm most excited for is Thanksgiving, and then after that, Maxine, the third X movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes,
what a great series that has been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just so much fun. Last question, Seth. Question number five. The name of the show is Let's Talk About. I rate my movies using the taco scale. So, Seth, I would like for you to craft for me your perfect taco. What kind of shell are we using? What kind of protein? Make me a delicious taco.
Oh, it would be probably like the street corn tortilla. And then steak, guacamole, lettuce, and this like a seven mixed cheese.
Ooh, okay.
Oh
Okay.
yeah. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
like it's just an
Are you a
oddly
hot sauce
specific.
guy?
Oh, not really. I
Sure.
like a tangy salsa.
Okay. Man, I say this every episode, but it's like I record this show like in the evenings, and sometimes I haven't had dinner yet, and then we get to this question, and I'm like, oh God, now I'm so hungry. So luckily, that's the last question, and we're done. So Seth,
Fantastic.
this has just been just a blast, like such a fun chat. Is there a place where people can kind of find your stuff online that you don't, that you, I guess, don't mind getting visitors to come, see your posts?
My Instagram is open. It's a public thing. So mine is under VHS Seth. That's VHS underscore Seth.
Nice.
And also to find me on Facebook, it's Seth B. dot Benson. So it's my middle initial. It's the thing. But yeah, other than that, yeah, I don't really have too much. I'm just booked. I can't
Listen,
really
man.
like film things with friends.
No, that's good. Just yeah, keep it simple. You're just you got enough going on, man. I get you. Yeah, one more time, Seth. This has just been an absolute blast. So thank you very much for doing the show and talking about Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh, no problem. Thank you so much for making this work out. We'll have to do another one in about 2 years.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's when we'll get to it. Once again, a huge thank you to Seth Benson. Yeah, it's always fun to talk about a movie that I really love. But like, it's a fun movie too. You know, there are movies that I love that are kind of like, oh, I love this movie so much, and I want to talk about it. But like, I don't know, I have more of a more of a connection to, and the movie's kind of silly. So, but this was a good time. So again, thank you so much, Seth, for an awesome chat. That's gonna do it for this week's episode. Please feel free to follow all things Fat Dude Digs Flicks. You can do so on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, whatever. Just do a search for Fat Dude Digs Flicks and you will find me there. Subscribe to this podcast, like this podcast, rate and review this podcast, share this podcast with your friends. I'm going to keep doing this podcast until I am tired of it, but it always helps to have more listeners, and one way to do that is by sharing this episode. So please, if you know somebody who would be interested in what we're doing here at Fat Dude Digs Flicks, share this with them. Also, leave a rating and a review, particularly if you use like Apple Podcasts or Spotify. They have options or a place where you can like, you know, leave a written review or leave a rating, and that kind of helps get the podcast out there to more people. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Good Pods. If you do subscribe to this podcast, not only do you get Let's Talk About, but you also get the Criterion Break, where I am joined by Blake Ginnethon and Derek Vierink, where we talk about our love for the Criterion Collection proper and the Criterion Channel. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, recommendations, or would like to be a guest, please feel free to send an email to fatdudediggsflicks@gmail.com. I always love talking about movies. I always love having new guests. I always love recommendations. The best way to do that is just by reaching out. So please send an email, fatdudediggsflicks@gmail.com, and join the conversation. Also, join the conversation on Facebook at the South Dakota Film Community Group. If you're in the South Dakota area or not, and just like movies and want to talk about movies with people that also like movies, that's the place to go. Also, make sure you subscribe to the Screams from the Basement podcast, hosted by Casey Kelderman and Sam Lenz. I am merely a horror tourist as far as podcasting is concerned this time of the year. I love horror movies, but most of my, you know, I usually just use the month of October to podcast about them. Casey and Sam are podcasting about horror movies all the time. So if horror is your jam, certainly follow the guys at the Screams from the Basement podcast. That's it. That's everything. That's going to do it for this week's episode. Or not this week's episode, the first of this week's episode. There will be more. I think, as long as I don't screw up the recording schedule, there could be another episode this week. So meet back here whenever I say it is fat time. This is the same fat channel, and let's talk about movies. Thank you so much for listening. Please be safe out there. Have a wonderful week, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye!
Thank you for listening to Fat Dude Digs Flicks.